Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Pavi, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken Calls this morning. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, we have with us Liz Mitten Ryan, someone who's really embodied that theme of living the wisdom of the herd. Thanks again for joining today's call. We will start with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves. Thank you. And welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call, today in conversation with Liz Mitten Ryan. Here's how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Anne Vey, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker, Liz Mitten Ryan. And by the top of the hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing, where we'll invite all your reflections and questions. I've opened up the queue right now, so at any point, you can hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us at ask@servicebase.org. Behind this particular call, there are some wonderful serendipities that I wanted to share with our listeners. A few weeks ago, through Daily Good, we received an email from Liz with a trailer to the upcoming film on her work. The film is titled Herd. Late that night, I clicked on the link and was immediately struck by the wild beauty of the land and the profound presence of her horses. Where is this place and what is happening here? I was just filled with questions and wonder, and immediately parallels to another special film came to mind, a film called Teach Me to Be Wild that focuses on the healing work of a wildlife sanctuary here in Half Moon Bay, California, where injured animals and wounded children are given a chance to hold space for each other in transformative ways. And it just so happens that our moderator today, Anne Vey, is one of the filmmakers behind Teach Me to Be Wild. She is a remarkable artist, educator, writer, an active service-based volunteer, and so much more. A quick story about Anne that shares a great deal about who she is. When she was 2 years old or so, she has a distinct memory of waking up and looking up into the night sky and its panorama of stars and thinking, that's my home. That's my home. Her connection to nature, her reverence for the inner spirit in all things, and her many expressions of generosity lend a certain sparkle to her presence and all that she does. Within a few days of receiving Liz's email, Anne, Liz, and I had connected on a conference call, and this Awaken call was a ripple from there. I'm truly excited to hear these two kindred spirits in conversation and to learn from the deep experiences of Liz's journey. With that, I will hand over to our dear friend Anne to take it away.
Thank you, Pavi. It is such a joy to be in conversation and a part of this beautiful circle this morning. And it's a profound pleasure to introduce Liz. Liz is such a beautiful soul. She is a mother of six, an award-winning artist, an esteemed author, an animal communicator, and a facilitator of extraordinary healing experiences. And as Pavi shared, this year we will see her award-winning film, The Herd, and learn about her beautiful equinistry retreats at her ranch. Liz shares with an abundance of warmth and generosity, and her sincerity invites a special trust and a sacred space for deep listening. Raised in the city of Vancouver, she remembers as a young child sitting on a city sidewalk, scraping at the tar with a popsicle stick, longing for the summers with her grandmother, where she could roam and play in nature. In 1999, Liz left the terrain of her known life and moved with her husband and her herd of 11 horses to the grasslands of British Columbia. And on 320 acres of pristine land, her 11 horses were free to roam wild as their ancestors. Living on the land in a simple tent for several months, Liz first experienced a state of loneliness. She found herself following the herd day after day, on the land and in quiet communion with the horses. She began to recognize their gift, their connection to all life. And in her heart, she realized her deepest calling, to connect with animals and spirit and to share this understanding with the world. And at this time, she found the subject of her art changing from painting wildlife to horses. And spending less time on her art practice, she was drawn to explore the horse relationship with the herd. And one day, she felt an overwhelming urge to write. And over the span of 2 years, she wrote 4 books, each a collaboration with her animals. The 11 horses, a pony, a steer, and her dogs and cats. She seeks to be a channel of their messages and wisdom. And for more than a decade now, she has facilitated equine retreats at her ranch, offering a sanctuary where people come to heal and experience being in relationship with the land and the herd. And as one retreat participant stated, you have to be in your truth, and then they will come to you. That is what they asked from us. So welcome, Liz. It is such a joy to be in conversation with you this morning.
Thanks, Anne. It's just wonderful to talk with you again and all of you listeners. That was a beautiful, beautiful, introduction. And it really does talk about this long period of time that I have disconnected from, the world as most people know it. It's been 17 years now, and I've gone from, dark brown hair, though somewhat forced, to that silvery knowing of, the sage. So 9 grandchildren have added to our crowd, and many more horses. We're at 14 now. But the real story is that I have been so disconnected.
I'm sorry. I'm a little puppy.
wait for mine. They're going to start soon. I've been so disconnected from the world that everyone shares, like without newspapers or television or radio, I have been absolutely in this blissful, timeless bubble where I really feel that this is what many people have forgotten and what is really healing for people to remember again, to reconnect with.
I wanted to ask Lee, Liz, I was very curious about in your young life, and also just through your life, who are the important people? Who are the important people or mentors in your life?
My grandmother, when I was very young and growing up in the city of Vancouver, I would go to my granny's summer house for July and August every year. And it was on the beach and the woods, and that was my very sacred place. And just learning from my grandmother, who was so service-oriented, so generous, so kind. She looked after all the cousins and all the neighbors, and she was just this fountain of wisdom that, taught me everything that was important. And from there, I suppose, I have read books and books and books and books, everything that speaks of spirituality or even quantum physics. trying to understand what is life about? What am I here for? What is my journey? And that's what I try to encourage people who come here to take that deep look at, am I doing what I came here to do? Am I in my truth as an individual? Because we're all so unique and we all have, you know, blessings and things that we can give that other people can't. And listening to that intuitive guidance, and that's what the animals teach, is be in your truth, listen to your intuition, and everything else will follow.
I'm just reminded when you speak about, you know, being in nature, walking in nature, just being amongst the trees, the plants, touching the land, that you come into nature's rhythm. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about the experience of when you first moved to British Columbia onto this beautiful land and were living in a tent. You know, what were those first days like? What was the first experiences like?
Well, it was really amazing because I had moved virtually overnight from a booming, bustling, busy household. My husband is an architect. I was an artist. We were raising six children, and the kids were all ready to fledge at this point, and many had, in fact, fledged. But we were in a very small community. I was doing my art. He was doing architecture. And there was always people coming and going and visiting our home studio. And suddenly, I packed up everything and drove up to the Nicola Valley. It was just a four-hour drive. And there I was in the middle of 320 acres, surrounded by the biggest ranch in Canada. So absolute pristine land and absolutely alone because my husband was running back to our home in Gibson's, trying to, you know, sort out his business and the move. So I spent many, many days alone in this wall tent, which is basically wood floor and walls and a canvas roof. And we have actually modeled the retreat accommodation on that experience because it was so life-changing. Listening to the wind, listening to the birds, opening the door and walking out, that was my home. The whole land was my home. And my only companions were my animals. So I spend a lot of time just following the herd, watching the herd, learning from the herd, not realizing at the time that I was being tuned by the land and the animals to that, you know, natural vibration of the natural world, 528 hertz. It's almost like when we spend that active samadhi, that time, just walking, communing, spending time on the earth, we get tuned like a tuning fork. And it's something that people are doing less and less of. So it absolutely changed me. And I began journaling. And then from the journaling, I began writing, turning the journal into channeled messages that I was getting from the trees, the land, my horses, because I really began to understand that there is only one consciousness.
Could
and
you speak,
we all connect to that in our own unique way.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could speak to that moment, though, when you do speak about feeling that loneliness. And what was it in your being that kind of inspired you to walk with the herd, that, you know, that first adventure into land with the herd and just following them? You know, what was living in you at that time?
Well, I was absolutely alone, and I've always kind of played the woman card, you know, I don't know, can I make a fire? I don't know, could you carry that piece of, you know, wood over for me? And there I was in this tent with a leaky old wood stove that flames would go out through the cracks, and I was afraid at times, and I had no one to turn to. And so basically, I began to realize that, you know, I was born alone, and I'm going to die alone, and I really essentially am alone. And my only connection is God, or as my animals began to call God, the all and the everything. So essentially, God was everywhere. It was in every experience. It was in every moment. So I began to look at everything instead of an issue or a problem or a, you know, something, it more as a gift that was being given to me to help me understand that bigger picture. And the horses were just so instrumental in that because they were a family group. So we had a grandmother spirit and her younger sister and then their children and their children's children. And they were all essentially that family grouping exploring this huge playground along with me. But they knew how to do it so perfectly. It's like they had never been city horses. They were just on the land. They knew where to go to drink. They knew where to go to eat. They lay down in the meadow to sleep. It was just so wonderfully soothing to be in their company.
Well, then I just want to share with the callers this morning or the guests on the call this morning that your horses are outside your window now and very much a part of this call and how special and sacred that is.
Yes, over time, we built the barn first because the horses need the roof over their head before we did, really. But we managed to move into our barn house December 2nd of the first winter. And it kind of cantilevers, our house cantilevers over the barn and the paddock. So when I walk out any door, I just go down a few stairs and I'm in the paddock. And when I walk down the front hall, I go down a ladder and I'm in the barn. And my view is out the window when the horses come in the morning, in the summer, when the horses go out. So I'm surrounded by them and it's like one big family, one big family home.
Oh, and I want to go back to that time when you were first on the land and following the herd. How did you receive the communication from the horses? If you could just share with us what that experience of listening and receiving from them.
I always suggest to people if they really want to understand animal communication. I remember at the time reading a book called Kinship with All Life. Mm. And it's by J. Allen Boone. And it is just a classic because it's a story of him being in Hollywood and looking after this Rin Tin Tin dog when everyone went on holiday. And one day he was sitting beside the dog on a hill contemplating something, and this whole idea popped into his head. And he kind of looked at the dog, and he looked, you know, in his past, and he went, this isn't my idea. Where did this idea come from? And it was like a microchip of information that was just implanted. And he realized it had come via the dog. And that's exactly what happened to me, is I would get this microchip understanding, but then I would say to the horse, whoever had, because in my mind, a horse would have kind of stepped forward and said, it's Ellie speaking for the herd, because one of them was interpreting the herd vision. And I began to realize that each of those horses were unique in their interpretation, but they all shared the same basic concepts. And that's how One with the Herd came to be, is I just sat down one day and got these huge microchips, but then I would say, give me words, and then the words would follow. And as long as I was following those words, one word after another, I was writing. And when the words stopped, I stopped. That was the end of my writing day. And it just continued like that. There was a flow that wasn't my flow. And at the end of the day, I'd go back and read what I'd written, and I went, wow, I never thought I would be a writer. I had no idea that I would write books, but they weren't my books. They were connecting to that one mind that animals help facilitate in us. It's not necessarily that Ellie is coming forward and solving the world's problems in her horse brain. It is that Ellie is a clear channel to one consciousness. And when we spend time in her company, we open up and we become that channel. It's all there. It's all available. There's nothing, I believe, that we are inspired by except that one consciousness.
You know, it's interesting how Rajesh and I were so blessed to be able to spend time on the land of the sanctuary in Half Moon Bay and to have this kind of film come into being. And it was so clear from, I think, from the very beginning for both of us that we were there just to caretake this story and to witness. And what was beautiful, it was clear that, you know, what we were experiencing, what we were seeing with the children transforming before our eyes in their relationship with the animals and hearing the stories of the animals and then being able to reflect in their own lives and this profound trust and surrender and letting go. And we found we had to go through the same experience as the children did. And it was, over time, it was so beautiful to realize that as you speak, you know, whose thought is that? Where is that coming from? And it is quite special, quite magical.
It is. And, you know, that is where inspiration comes, when we open ourselves in these quiet places and allow that, you know, that movement of thought and idea, that, you know, we are allowing the flow instead of directing the flow, which we do in the majority of our days. We have to follow the time clocks. We have to show up at work on time. We are all in our heads. But when you actually do allow yourself that space to open your mind, that meditative space is so important, however we do it, to be those vehicles for higher thought.
Yes.
So I was saying to Anne the other day that I'm so, so jealous of Steve Carlin and the fact that he has bears and condors and mountain lions and all these amazing creatures, because that was my dream. I have horses, dogs, and cats. They're pretty normal. But at any time, if somebody were to offer me some other creatures, I would totally be available for that. They're all so unique. But you know what is so amazing, too, is that when you are on sacred land, and especially where we are, we're in the middle of nowhere, we're miles from the nearest city, is that all the natural wildlife is available as well. And I had a hawk story. My hawk story was there was a big party at our neighbor's, and a huge, huge rainstorm. Just the sky opened up and poured. And these boys in their 20s were out driving around in the hills, having a great time. And there was a hawk just in the middle of the road, soaking wet. And apparently when hawks are soaking wet, they can't fly. And there could then be prey for coyotes or whatever else is around. So without thinking, these boys just went into rescue mode, picked up the hawk, wrapped it in a blanket, put it in their lap, and drove it straight to my house. So, and me, without thinking, I go, oh, my goodness, it was a beautiful red-tailed hawk, so incredibly beautiful. And all of us just went into help the hawk mode. And it didn't occur to me until the next day that, you know, hawks could be dangerous. I just bent over and I picked up the hawk and I put it in a little Tupperware with all kinds of hay. And I was stroking it and talking to it and saying, it's okay, we're going to look after you. And then we moved it into a doggy crate. And I went and got it some raw meat. I feed my dogs raw. So I opened the door and I put in the raw meat in my bare hand. And the hawk looks at it and says, thank you, and eats a little bit. Well, the next morning I went in. And I'd done hawk research. So I'd gone on the internet and it says, well, really, they eat mostly rabbits and birds. And, you know, so I'm thinking, oh, it probably doesn't like beef. I'll give it some raw chicken. So I go in and it looks beautiful the next morning. It's all dried off and it looks all bushy-tailed. And I'm saying, we're going to let you go. Just here, let me give you some breakfast. So I open the crate. I reach my hand and I take out the beef. I put in the chicken. This hawk just held me in its gaze. It was so magical. It was unbelievable. And I had one of my participants came over, and we spoke to this hawk, and I said, what's your name? And it just answered this, Ree, which is like a hawk call. It said, my name is Ree. And it was just amazing. So we decided we're going to take it back to where we found it. It's great. It's doing really well. My friend, my friend's husband, this is a big, strong guy, goes to pick up the crate to take the hawk to put it in the truck. And these claws grab the door of the crate. These, you know, they're like 2-inch-long claws hanging onto the door of the crate. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And we took it up in the hill, and I opened the door, and I actually got this part on video, and it just walked out, and it opened its wings and sailed. And, oh, my God, I was just so in love. But the sequel is this hawk comes back to visit me because it was only a few miles up the hill where we released it, and it brings its mate back. And I'll just stand out there and go, Wee! And it circles. It says, thank you. So, I mean, all of the natural world really knows when we're in that heart space and there is no need for, you know, defensiveness.
Well, it reminds me of the moment when I was at the sanctuary and spending time with Steve and Vidor, the Andean condor, and he is the bird with a wingspan of 8 to 9 feet. Extraordinary, extraordinary bird. And I remember asking Steve, do the animals enjoy our presence as much as we enjoy theirs? And he looked at me, Steve looked at me, and he said, yes. And in my heart, I knew that. But I still was kind of in my mind of kind of questioning. But in my heart, I could feel it. And I feel like that was such a profound teaching for me of spending time on the land and spending time with animals is the communication is you know, you lose it if you go into your mind and try to rationalize or try to think about it. But if you could just stay open and not have any expectation, those images or those words, they come.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they just help us be in that space. And I really, the more I see how my horses heal and work with people, then I realize they're using sacred geometry in their patterning and in their breathing, and they're literally changing the vibration so they act like a tuning fork on whoever is in the area. And that, you know, goes into the surrounding land. Everything is in its natural state, is tuning us, is all vibrating at that 528 hertz. And when we become tuned to that place, we suddenly remember, you know, who we really are before we got so caught up in the busyness of our day-to-day lives. And at that connection, we're connected to the all, as my animals call it. So, you know, creatures that come by here, the cranes come by every spring, and you can't describe it. Like you say, if you try to figure it out, there's no figuring it out. But thousands and thousands of cranes come from probably down by you back up to the north every spring. And when they come, I can hear their call. They have this very unique call, but they are miles up in the sky. They look like little fly specks. And I welcome them back, and I'm like, cranes, welcome back. Well, those cranes dip down over Gateway, and they have gone so low that they're just at tree height. And they'll come, and they'll circle around my paddock, and weirdly, the horses will actually look up. I don't know if anybody, horses don't normally look up, but they'll all go, oh, my goodness, the cranes are back. And then I'll run down to the paddock, and those cranes will circle so many circles, and then rise up again and carry on. And I know they feel my connection and my energy, and they're coming to say hello.
And I'm wondering if you could share with us how these beautiful retreats came into being, Liz, and how you welcome people to come and heal and a chance to be. Could you share a little bit about how your vision of the retreat came to you?
Well, just like almost everything that has flowed into my life, it really wasn't my vision. It just kind of happened, and I'm always kind of the last one to get the picture. I'm going, oh, well, I guess we're doing retreats now. So, I mean, I'd written these books, and people were beginning to read the books, and I was getting emails from people saying, oh, I'd just love to come there and experience that. And around about the same time, I had healer friends, Reiki masters, and I had a Reiki master come over and set up the healing table in the paddock. And we thought, you know, let's do this really near the horses and see if the horses are interested. Well, the horses came right over and began to tune all my chakras. And I was just like, oh, my goodness. And it just evolved from there. And then, you know, somebody would say, can I come? We'd say, well, sure. And then we started adding wall tents so we'd have more room. And then we added on to our guest house. And then we began to kick family members out who wanted to visit because we had so many people wanting to retreat that we had to put up more tents for family members. I mean, it has just grown. And, you know, when I say that, our retreats are not large. We have maybe 10 people at a retreat would be, you know, your average retreat, maybe between even 6 and 10. We have a capacity now for 18 just this year because last year was so busy. We had to add, you know, an addition to the guest house and a few more tents. But They're very small scale compared to a lot of other things you go to. And they can't get very much larger because then there isn't that one-on-one experience that you can have when you're just a group of, you know, sort of close friends, which you become very quickly. So anyway, yes, it wasn't my plan, but then again, over 10 years of retreating, I developed a manual where, you know, I introduced some concepts for people to explore, and we pass talking sticks, and we share people's day, what flew in from the east, if a raven flew in, a deer crossed their path, what the horses brought up for them. So what we basically are doing is leading people through the adventure of just being open to what will inspire them, what will appear for them. And we share that and help them discover that place that they haven't allowed themselves time for. And it is life-changing. It really is. And everybody that comes for a different reason. And yet the groups that seem to come at the same time are just perfect for each other. Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, one time I had a group of women, and there was seven or eight, and every one of them clearly remembered having a past life experience here on the land and being in that same experience together. That was pretty bizarre. And they had all randomly decided to come and reunite here at that time. So, it is very, very free form and not at all planned.
Well, what struck me too, and even watching the trailer for The Herd, is you experience a group of people arriving and just the being held by the incredible beauty and just walking down the paths to the house and circling on your deck to have a conversation. And it's so, I think, with all of us who have experienced the awakened circles and service spaces, that very same feeling that you arrive and you become part of a circle, and there's this beautiful trust and surrender that happens. And in that space, you get to be, you know, whatever is living in you rises up. And you may not even realize, you know, why we're there, but it will become known over time.
Well, it's sacred space, and when you put out intention, kindred spirits show up. They're called, and people will email me and say, I have no idea why I'm so deeply called to do this. But that is the important reason to do it, because when you do surrender to that higher calling, it is amazing what that has in store for you. You have no idea where it's going to go and how it's going to come out. But it's always perfect.
Can you share maybe a story of, a participant coming and how they find their animal or what happens in the space of how do you introduce someone to this incredible experience?
Well, we have certain tools. And first of all, the manual, which I give everybody when they arrive in the afternoon, and I ask them to read through, you know, an understanding of mindfulness, you know, how we are going to be in this experience, being present, being quiet. The tools we'll use oracle cards. I have this one pack of oracle cards. Well, actually two by the same person, Colette Baron-Reed. Oh, my God. People every morning are asked to do one card from each deck. And that kind of sets the tone or gives the message for what possibly could happen in the day. Well, those are so divinely guided. It's like everything that happens here is divinely guided. somebody will come in and say, my totem's a deer. And they'll be walking to their tent, and a deer will say, hello, welcome to Equanicity Retreats. I heard your totem was a deer. It's just so hard to explain how those threads all come together. But I encourage everybody to journal. So you bring a journal, and you write down your cards that you get in the morning. You walk across the property alone and mindfully, not chatting with your friend about, you know, relatives that lived in the same city, but being here now in this space. And people arrive, and the herd is all at liberty. This is so interesting because this herd of horses can go anywhere they want on 320 acres. And they go out every afternoon when we have done our healing time. And they come back in at about 5:30 in the morning. They wander in every single morning, check themselves back into the paddock, and are waiting here when people come at 9 o'clock for their morning horse time. And the herd is all free, so there's no halters or lead ropes. So it's really the horses pick the people. And I tell people, just walk around and see where you're called. And if you feel called to a certain horse, just go stand nearby and ask them, you know, are you open to spending time with me? And the horse will respond. So, and then the horses will actually go into sacred geometry, and they'll all gather in this big open barn space we have. It's really like a big open riding arena with seats around where the posts are, so people can be right in the center of the horse activity. And they'll move in and they'll take up some morning meditation position. And that can be anything from a circle to a square to individual spokes of a wheel to a zipper. And we've begun to actually describe some of these positions because we're going, oh my goodness. And then they'll hold that for a little while, and then all change. And then if somebody is sitting near and they sense something going on with them, one of the horses will just go over and deal with it. So, I mean, we have horses like Epona and Peshawar. They will open their mouth over your nose and mouth and give you mouth-to-mouth for 15 minutes. And I say to people, it's okay. It's totally safe. They really know what they're doing. Or they'll tip your head sideways and breathe in your ear. And they do that a lot with people that have chemotherapy. I don't know what they're doing, but they're restructuring their head. And it kind of makes sense because chemotherapy, you lose your hair. So they do so many amazing things. They will lie down at people's feet. They'll put their head in people's laps. It's all extremely unique and individual. And yet, if there's people that have boundaries and are a little uncomfortable, they'll stand back respectfully until maybe day two or day three when that person says, it's okay, you can come now and give me mouth to mouth. So there's all of this unseen, you know, things going on. And I can look and I can say to somebody, have you ever had any injuries below the waist? Because all of the horses will be going to that person and nosing up and down their legs. Or if they're sitting on a stool, they'll put their foot on the stool when the person gets off, or their nose on the stool. Or somebody will be writing in their journal, and a horse will come and put their nose right on the journal. And I say, they want to know what you're writing. It is really magic. I cannot begin to interpret everything they're doing. But the more I watch, the more I realize there is, you know, there's colors and there's vibration and there's patterns. And they're using them all to restructure the energetics. And a result of that is people connect on that higher level of oneness, wholeness, allness. And from there comes healing and wellness. So it's a mystery, but it's really fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the key right there, where you say it's really fun, because it's there. And you also use the word invitation. You know, it's an invitation, you know, inviting on both sides, invitation from the horses, invitation from the participants. And when that meeting happens, there's this really, you can kind of feel the palpable joy and playfulness of and curiosity. Okay, I'm open. And those, like, you almost, I can almost feel in my own body how these barriers just kind of disappear. And then
we are all one. I mean, that is the secret. When you are in this space of oneness, there are no barriers. And that's what gradually evolves through the retreat, is people just get it. And whether they get it because the horses have tuned them to a place where it's just a spontaneous breakthrough, or whether they get it because they finally are allowing the silence and that connection to that place, even the land. Amazing things happen on the land to people. That, you know, people see different things. Everybody sees different things. I mean, I have people here who have told me they see crystal children coming up out of the earth. Because we have some areas on the land that have these, like, big holes that go deep down into the earth. And we have rivers of crystals that run under the earth. We have quartz and fluorite and chalcopyrite, all of which are just amazing tuning minerals for healing the body. And I have people that say, I see unicorns. Oh, a unicorn just jumped that log. And everybody is different and unique. Some people see fairies. Some people just see the natural creatures on the land, and they have, you know, huge meaning for them. So it's a playground. It's like being allowed to be a child again and put yourself in nature and go build tree forts and go hang out in special places with special animals and what happens.
Yeah. I remember a time being at the sanctuary with Pavi, actually, and Steve invited us to come and just spend time with Vidor the condor. And we pulled some chairs and we just sat in front of his, he's this vast, vast enclosure where he can fly, you know, he's room to fly and play. But as we sat there with him, he stayed right where we were. And he started there was a child little ball inside his near his little home, and he started to play with the ball and run, and I mean, just like a little child. And it was hysterical. We were just laughing, like we were just playful together. And, you know, all of a sudden we realized, what time is it? And 2.5 hours had passed, and it felt like we were beyond the sense of time. It was extraordinary. And it's amazing how that, again, that invitation is always open.
Well, as children, that's that space that we all remember. Those summers that lasted forever. Days just seem to go on and on and on. And time, I mean, more and more. I mean, my horses told me this years ago in book two, the truth according to horses. They said time is not linear. Time spirals and loops and falls back upon itself. Yeah. And time is ever present. And that's the kind of world that children are in. And then we grow up and we become part of this accepted belief system that we all listen to, and we're all told by the schools and by our parents that, no, you know, you have to go from A to B to C. Everything is linear. Everything has its time and its space. But now in quantum physics, they're beginning to realize that's not true. None of this has been true. Particularly for our generation, there's been a lot of beliefs that we have grown up with that are all being challenged. But what's interesting is, my horses have already told me this. You know, it's something, I have a bumper sticker that says, everything I learned from my horse.
Yeah.
And it's so true. In the natural world, all of those things are apparent.
Well, and I want to go back to what you shared earlier in our call, which was, you know, I wish I'm so envious of Steve Carlin and his relationship with Susie Bear, and the sense of the profound relationship that Steve and Susie Bear had. And, you know, even when she was dying, Steve shares a story where she, you know, he had his hand on her paw, and then as she was getting close to passing, he removed his hand, and she just put her paw on top of his. And it was so, and he shared that, you know, a piece of him went with her. And that even now today, he receives, you know, so many teachings from her, that the teachings continue, the relationship continues. And just the beauty of opening to, like, you know, we have no idea how held, we have no idea how protected, we have no idea. Really, these experiences open up this incredible possibility, this beautiful mystery of life, sacred life we are all a part of.
I know. When you look at the gift that the Earth is, that the planet is, and, you know, you look at those series like Planet Earth and that incredible beauty and diversity, and you think, that's all a gift. That's all our gift. And every creation, every different is so unique and so special, and they're all God in form. And when you start to actually look at everything in that way, you realize we are all interdependent, that we cannot, and this is how my horses put it in The Truth According to Horses again, is that we each are like organs in the body of the all. And if you say that, say, humans are the liver, and say horses are the heart, and, you know, birds are the kidney, whatever. We are all part of that one body. And if one of those organs gets sick and dies, the body dies. It's that important. So obviously this creator, who is all-knowing, all-loving, has created every single little nuance of this amazing experience, and every single bit is important. And yet, you know, humans have become so careless of all of these things, using it for their purpose, for amassing a whole lot of money. And the horses say, what do you need green paper in the bank for? How does that serve you? Because animals, in their wisdom, take only what they need, and it's always given. They have whatever they need in the natural world, and that's all they need. So they kind of look on humans as needing to understand the importance of those so simple foundational truths, because we have just strayed so far away that animals are really our only chance to get back to that place, you know, that Garden of Eden space again.
I'd love, Liz, to share with all of us, too, a little bit when you speak about the herd and when a new, you know, fowl is born, or even the steer, Tesoro. How did he become part of the herd? Can you share a little bit about Tesoro?
Well, we have one herd member who is a steer, and everyone else is horses. And when I got to Zorro, I got him because I said to the ranch below, if you ever have an orphan, you know, think of me, because my horses were terrified of cows. And we'd go out riding in the hills, and they'd see cows, and they'd be like, ah! They'd want to run home. So when we brought to Zorro, you know, their first reaction was, oh, my God, why did you bring one of those into our midst? And over time, Tesoro started out as hanging out with the dogs on the front porch, because he was very little. He was 5 days old. And I had to feed him with a bottle, and he followed me everywhere, every time he was hungry. And then I gradually introduced him to my two little ponies I had at the time. And so he became a pony. And then slowly, since the ponies accepted him, the horses began to accept him. And this is 10 years later now. And he's just one of the herd. And in fact, he's in love with Crystal, who is the biggest horse in our herd. And when she's in heat, he'll lick up and down one side, and Crystal will say, "Get me right there. Oh, that's so good," because he has this really raspy tongue. And he'll even mount Crystal, although he's getting so big now that it's kind of hard for him to get up anymore. But he really has no concept of himself as a cow. And once in a while, the neighbor's cows will break in, and there'll be a little band of five or six cows that will come over and go over to Solo and say, "Hi." And he'll go, "Oh, hi." And you'll have a short conversation, and then he'll go, "I got to go. My herd's leaving." So, you know, it's really amazing. And he's such a Buddha. Cows are so different than horses in that they're very quiet nature. I see why the Indian people revere them, because they just have this Buddha presence. He'll lie down in the barn, and people who are afraid to go up to the horses at the beginning, I'll say, "Go sit with Tesoro. And you can lie on him, beside him, lean on him, and he'll just hold that space, chew his cud, and just, you know, spread that peace." So, I mean, I it's wonderful having a unique creature other than a horse.
Well, and just the beauty of that acceptance, and I was also really moved in the trailer to see one of the participants connect with the steer in such a beautiful way, and the playfulness and the just incredible patience. You could just feel the patience of Tesoro.
He is. And you know what he's doing right now? Because we're talking about him. He wandered over to the porch. And what he does is he makes eye contact with me. And he gives me his silent moo that says, "Mom, you need to throw me two apples." So I'm just doing that. I'm walking over with the phone. And I'm going to open the door because I have to give him his apples when he asks so nicely. So tell me if you're losing me, but I'm taking the phone with me.
No, it's perfect.
Hi, Tesoro. Here we go.
And I'm giggling because our little puppy Gus, who's almost 3 years now, he has been playing the whole time we've been in conversation and throwing his toys and just like so joyful.
What
and
about me?
Yes, exactly. It's just wonderful.
No, my guys, if they want my attention, they just line up outside. Like I can see them from my kitchen, from my dining room, from my bedroom. So they just line up there and just stare right at me and send me that transfer of thought. "Mom, I need something." And I go, "Really? What could that be? Would that be an apple or a carrot? Or both?"
Oh, beautiful. And I'm going to
move any animals. If he's too full, tell him I have lots of space.
Okay.
And it's really funny, actually, because my husband is not an animal guy so much. He likes cats. He loves children. But he wasn't brought up with animals being part of the family like I was. And every animal that I had wanted to add in over the years was always met with this sigh and another one. And now I'm up to, you know, 14 horses, a steer, 3 cats, 3 dogs. And every once in a while I'll say, you know, wouldn't it be fun to have a different type of animal? And right now he's just given up. He's surrounded by animals and that's his life, but he loves me and that's, you know, he puts up with it.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Well, I'm going to jump in at this opportunity. The first hour has just flown by. We do have a couple of questions that came in over the web, but I also wanted to remind listeners that if they would like to ask a question, they can hit *6
to join the queue. And they can also send it to us via the web at ask@servicebase.org. Liz, I'm going to go ahead and ask one of the questions that came in from Cindy via the web form, and she's writing in from Austin, Texas. And her question is, what happens when a new horse is introduced to the herd? Is there a learning curve for them, or do they automatically and instinctively become healers?
Well, horses are much more easily integrated into the herd, but it depends on whether that horse has knowledge of herd herd language. And because every once in a while, my herd is all one family. They're all born here. They're born into this situation. But every once in a while, I'll have ranch help who wants to bring a horse. And my most amazing experience for having a horse be integrated was this one girl who came, and she sent me a picture of her horse who looked exactly like my dominant mare's daughter, Magic. A dead ringer could have been born into this herd. So I went, that'll be interesting. So what I did is I left all the herd in the paddock, and we brought this horse and put it in the pasture surrounding. So it was free to come and go wherever it wanted. And it just stood out there. And one by one, my herd went up to the fence and asked to go out and meet it. So as they asked, I would let them out. And it started with the youngest ones who were like, oh, a new horse. I'd like to go see. So I'd let one out, and that horse would put a run on this horse to see if it was going to be respectful of them telling it what to do. And the horse would respectfully run, and then it would stop and graze and say, I'm no threat. And so then we'd add the next horse, and they went through the whole herd that way until we got to Ellie and Diva, who were my grandmother spirit, my lead mare, and my dominant mare, the two older sisters. And they, everyone else in their herd had gone out, was grazing peacefully. I opened the gate when they went up at the very end, and they just walked out, didn't even put a run on, said, hey, it's okay. You know, it was so amazing. But there is other horses that I've seen, because they're kept in a captive situation in a paddock, they're separated from other horses. They don't have any etiquette. They don't have any herd language. They'll have a very hard time integrating into a herd, and particularly into a herd like at a rental place where none of the horses have any social skills. None of them have a common language because they've all been brought up and separated. And that's when it's very difficult because nobody listens to anybody.
That seems so telling, and something that, you know, it is not just restricted to the horse herds, but just any kind of family.
Exactly. And as far as healing goes, most horses are just natural healers. But again, you know, it's like saying a criminal you pulled out of a jail cell is the same as a monk, because they've both been in isolation. And two different scenarios, right? So, yeah, again, if you give a horse a natural way of living, you give them freedom, you give them a family, you give them all of those tools, and then you invite them to share, then they have something to offer.
Liz, I wanted to jump in with a couple of questions of my own, and there's two things. One is regarding your personal journey. How did, when you look back at that journey that you've had with horses, where did that love stem from, or what can you share about, you know, that recognition that you had at some point, or must have had, that horses were, and you were meant to, you know, have a shared destiny? And then the other question that you can segue into from that is, horses and humanity, it seems like, have had a shared destiny for a long, long time. And is there anything you can share about that from your experience and what your herd has communicated to you?
Yes. Well, my particular instance was I was born loving horses. As early as I can remember, the minute I saw a horse, I just went, oh, horsey, must be with horsey. And I was a city kid, so my mom took us down and we had riding lessons when I was five. And then we, you know, just went through until I begged and begged for a horse. But, of course, I didn't get one until I was about 16. And then there was the problem of, you know, it would have to live in a little cramped place in the city. And so I didn't really follow that calling until I had grown, had a family of my own, and could choose to live in the country and have a space for horses. So, many people I speak to just have this innate connection to horses. And it probably is past life and many lifetimes in the making. Because, like you say, horses have given us the civilization we have today. They've been our friends for millennia, as have dogs and cats. You know, they're our closest connection to nature. And like my horse has said again in The Truth According to Horses, which is their kind of guidebook for humans to understand how animals know better than they do. And so they have this kind of, you know, disdainful attitude sometimes. But they say, think about it. You know, if you really understand the animal communication and this microchip of information that gets given, you know, before horses pulled carts, right, or carried things on their back, first of all. So then suddenly humans got this inspiration. Why don't we put wheels on a cart? Because that will make it easier to move. Where do you think that inspiration came from, the horses say? And then we went from pulling the cart to horsepower. So then we got electric engines, so the horse didn't have to pull the cart anymore. We had, you know, horsepower. Where do you think that inspiration came from? And so they're basically taking ownership for all of those channeled thoughts that humans just suddenly go, oh, I think I have an invention. Where did that invention come from? One mind, higher consciousness. So, Yes, I think a lot of people feel that connection to horses because they have just been part. We could never have become the civilized world we are today without horses to take us further and faster.
It's incredible. And I think what's also so powerful about the work that you've done and the experiences that you're opening up for people is, you know, when you talk about the wisdom of the herd, that, again, is not something that is just applicable within the horses or within a particular herd. It's wisdom that's for all life. And can you speak a little bit more, you know, in the film, there's a little piece that where you talk about the difference between kind of the command and control way of doing things versus the invitation way. And I think Anne touched on that a little earlier as well. Can you speak a little bit about how herd language works and what that the invitation approach means?
Yes, it's interesting because humans have translated herd language into you move or I'll make you. And in a really authentic herd, that is a family group, which people don't often see. You know, they're seeing two dominant mares or two dominant horses saying, you move or I'll make you, because they're very disjointed, separate. They're not a family. They're individuals. So in a natural family where everybody knows the language, everybody is connected and close to their family members, it's all done by focus. So the lead mare is always confused with the dominant mare in made groups of horses, because that's who surfaces as the dominant mare saying, hey, I'm going to eat before you. You move when I tell you. But the lead mare is the grandmother spirit in a natural herd. And she's actually the older sister to the dominant mare. And the lead mare teaches by love and by focus. So she walks through and the waters part. She'll just simply walk through the herd, and out of respect for her wisdom, for her compassion and her love, all the members part. The dominant mare would never argue with the lead mare. So it's all done, and this is, the horse has taught me herd language in this way by my watching Ellie and how she trained. She would walk towards the horse and just focus on the body part she wanted to move. If she was looking at the hind end, that horse would just take a few steps, move the hind end out of her way, and she would sail through. And it's so simple. And when she wants to get them to go somewhere, it's invitation and reward. So let's all go down to the meadow, and I'll show you where the best grass is. So I began to invite my horses and reward my horses and make my horses feel happy and loved. And when I wanted to move something, I would just simply focus, and out of respect, they'd go, well, they began to relate me as the grandmother spirit as well. And they have respect when I ask them to move something. I don't need a big whip. And that translates to everybody who comes here. If they spend 10 minutes with a horse, following those principles, saying to the horse, I understand your language. I know how to back you without touching you. I know how to move your body parts. And I have some really yummy treats. Would you like to come for a walk with me? It's like the horses just go, oh, duh. And it's done. So in the movie, you actually see horses who have spent 10 minutes with people they've never met before. People take off the halter, drop it on the ground, and the horse follows them down to the playground and gets up on tires and goes through little swim noodles and walks across bridges because they understand that communication system.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing because what you say, even for those of us who may not have had any personal one-on-one experience with horses, the wisdom behind what you're sharing just feels so natural and true that we can teach and affect the world through our love and our focus and in a way that works with the energies of nature as opposed to, you know, against the tide. I was wondering, because there are a couple more questions, but I'm, again, going to jump in from first since I have that privilege here. I was wondering if you could, you know, the first book that you wrote after moving to Gateway 2 Ranch was one with the herd, and which is a beautiful collection of pictures, journal entries, art. And that was a book, you know, that you felt at the time that you had authored, but by the time you wrote your second book, you said it was clear that it was the horses who were writing with you. And can you describe how that became clear to you, and then how did that collaboration work?
Well, actually, it was clear very close to the beginning of that book, because I had no idea in my mind that I would ever write a book. I was an artist. I just didn't have any idea in my head. And one morning I was sitting across the breakfast table and my husband looked at me and he said, when are you going to write your book? And it was like he could see it sitting in the air around me. It was the weirdest thing. And I went, what? What book? What are you talking about? And the next morning I just had this desire to grab a pen and a pad of paper. And I was sitting right, you know, looking out the window at the herd, and suddenly there was this flow, and I started to write, and I went, oh my God, I wrote 5 or 6 pages, and I went, oh my God, I'm writing a book. And within the very first few channelings, I realized, this is not my book. This has to be the horse's book. You know, they wanted me to start writing this book. And as I began to realize that, I actually made a conscious effort that I would sit down with my pad of paper and my pen, and I would visualize all the herd members there with me. And then I began to actually be able to see that one of them would step forward and say, it's magic, I'm speaking for the herd, or it's diva, and each one of those became unique interpretations of the general herd message. So the individual is connected to the family herd. The family herd is connected to horse consciousness. Horse consciousness is very connected to all animal consciousness. And beyond that, to human mass mind consciousness. And beyond that, to all consciousness. So once you get in through one of those channels, the world is open to you. All information flows when you have a connection. So very quickly after that book, we began asking the horses questions. And I said to my husband, I don't even know what to ask them. Why don't you ask them? He says, his first question to Ellie, how would you improve upon man's inept stewardship of the earth? I go, whoa. And Ellie wrote about 6 pages on that. And really, I would just be in this flow. The question would be asked. I'd call them all there in my mind's eye. One would come forward, and I would just write as fast as I could, because I'm like a two-finger typist. I had to hand write all these books. And there it would be, and I'd read it back, and I'd go, wow, horses really should rule the world. They'd do a much better job of it than humans.
Wow. That's beautiful. I'm going to go to our next caller in the queue here.
Hi, this is Wendy from Half Moon Bay, and thank you so much for this such inspiring call, and I especially love the soundtrack of the barking dogs, you know. Had the experience of actually being there. One or two just very quick comments, how I'm just struck with the holistic opportunity that you provide for people, both in terms of the experience, what you were talking about earlier about the solitude of being in the land and walking in the land, but also the experience of being part of the herd. And how you're able to integrate both of those, and that's just a beautiful experience. And also how much I appreciate that you're able to give people the opportunity and the confidence that anybody can communicate with animals. And I think so many people don't have that kind of confidence. I think you have to be, you know, born especially gifted, but that we all have those gifts, and I want to thank you very much for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yes, I think it really comes from just quieting our minds, you know, being open and receptive. And also I suggest to people to put their hand on their heart when they're near the horses and be in the heart space and consciously train yourself to be in that heart space of unconditional love. And that makes it much more available.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Wendy. We have another live comment. This one's from Ontario, from Deb, who asks, do you do individual equine facilitated learning sessions with clients?
You mean online or at the retreat?
I think she means at the retreat.
Well, every one is an individual session. Every person that comes here is on an individual journey, and the land and the horses know it. And there's many, many different facets that are available, and people just tend to gravitate toward the ones that they're ready for. So, yes, it's all individual. It's, you know, and unique and special for everybody in their own calling.
And just in case it's on anyone's mind, are there online sessions as well, or is it all in person?
No. You know, I keep saying to people, I am not the teacher and healer here. I am just the facilitator. And the land, you know, spending that time in nature in a natural, powerful setting with this powerful group of teachers and healers, it's very similar to when people go swimming with dolphins or whales or, you know, go to some of these very powerful vortices in nature, like Sedona or Egypt. This place has it all. It has vortices, it has chakras on the land, it has powerful trees and rocks, and it has this resident group of powerful teachers and healers. So you are just dropping yourself in this amazing microcosm of whatever you need becomes available. It's not something that I can translate, you know, across the
world. Liz, I wanted to share also to invite anyone to just even taking a walk in nature. I remember walking on a beloved path up here in Marin. We live next to, right near a sacred mountain, Mount Tamalpai, and there is this wonderful trail called Tenderfoot, and I walked it for years. And one day I decided I'm just going to walk slowly and listen and be guided to where I'm going to sit. And I was amazed that every time I felt this is the spot to sit, I look around and there was a little stream coming down. There were redwoods kind of in a circle around, and almost like every place I felt called to had this, almost like you speak to that vortex of energy. And it was so beautiful because I was just curious. But I was amazed how much information, how guided when you just open.
All you have to do is ask. That is the simplicity of, you know, connecting to that intuitive, or like animals say, instinctive connection. Is when you ask, you'll be guided. You just have to be open and clear and notice, because so many times people will walk in nature, but the thoughts going around in their heads or the conversation with the person they're walking with takes them right out of that mindful place. And that's why one of our keys here is being present, being in the moment, being mindful, or you're going to miss what's being offered to you.
Beautiful. We have another note of appreciation from Mish in New York City. She says, Liz, I'm feeling so enchanted by everything shared during this call, such beautiful energy gifted by this listen. Have learned much and been blessed with joy often by the feral cat colony that we feed here in Brooklyn. Thank you.
Lovely. Yeah, even in Brooklyn, there's, you know, places. I often tell people, you know, when you're in nature, just scan the horizon and look at how unique and different all the trees are. And you'll see one tree with its arms spread out in welcome. You'll see another tree that is a double tree. And anything that stands out uniquely is almost like calling to you, come and experience me. Like you said, Pavi, about just feeling, this is a special place. It's just, you just have to be open to that.
I'm going to maybe ask one more question, and then we could go on for hours on this call. There's so much to share. And I just wanted to mention to our listeners that Liz actually does have a newsletter that she puts out quite regularly, and that where she shares the stories from the herd and her experiences and the retreats, and they're beautiful in the insights and the just the anecdotes, and everything comes alive, I think, in those stories. Liz, I wanted to ask before handing it off to Anne to close out our call, as you know, as someone who has been this special channel. In a way, as you look forward, you know, into what's ahead of you and the herd, what is the vision that they're holding and that you're holding, you know, for the world at this time? What are they? Is there anything that you feel is being more urgently communicated?
Yes, I really do believe the Earth is at a period where there is a huge shift happening in consciousness, that, you know, we are moving from a third dimensional place into higher dimensional consciousness. And the only way that we're going to make that shift is to realize the importance of we have to do it together, together as a planet, together as all creation, as one consciousness. So I believe that nature and animals are what are going to offer us that higher connection to higher dimensional thinking and living and being, because it's innate, it's in us. We've just forgotten it, and we've gotten buried in the hustle and bustle, the television and the radio and the media telling us what we should think, what we should feel, what's going on in the world. But really, is that really what's going on in the world? There is just so much to be discovered by connecting to that one source of truth and oneness and unconditional love. And that's what I think will be our salvation.
Thank you, Liz. Well, we have, I wanted to just share that on my, right next to where I'm sitting, I have my beloved kindergarten teacher's, kindergarten teacher's creed. And on it, she writes, "I bring the gift of myself to this celebration of life." And further on, she goes on to say, "Seeds of the future are in the oneness of all nature and all people, in tune with the divine to be found in our hearts that I give through the joy and beauty of love." And I just want to express so much gratitude to you, Liz, and, you know, Betty, and all of us who are willing to really be live in our hearts and to have the courage to listen and to really listen and participate. Because it's really a sacred experience that we have to be human. So my last question to you, Liz, is how, as a community, as a service-based community, how can we support you on your journey?
You know, I was just going to thank you and Pavi and all of you service-based people for sharing what you're sharing, because it is so powerful and so important to find kindred spirits out there in the world and realize, you know, there are people out there who come from that unconditional heart space. And, you know, it's up to all of us to rediscover that and reconnect with it in whatever way we can and help bring that forth in the world. So, I'm willing to help in any way. I've always been open to when somebody says, I need your help. I go, well, how can I help you? I'll just tell you this little short story. The other day, I was grocery shopping in Kamloops, and there was this young man, I guess he's 26, he was sitting outside the grocery store playing his guitar, and he looked like a really nice, clean-cut, nice boy, like one of my children. And I went and did my shopping, and I came out, and he was still there. And I said, what are you doing here? And, you know, and he said, well, you know, I need to raise money. I wanted to go back east and visit my grandmother and blah, blah, blah. And I handed him $20, and then I went, ugh, that's not going to go very far. And then I said, well, what can you do? Like, do you want a job? And I, you know, we're building an addition on our guest house. So I say, how about drywall? How about construction? He's like, yes, 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 I'll do anything. How about shoveling up after horses? Yes. So I just said, okay, come with me. We did a tour of the grocery store. We stocked them up with groceries, whatever he would need for a week. I said, get in the truck. We're going to the ranch. So he's now in a tent, and he's been here 3 days. And he comes over, and he says, oh, this is such a gift. Thank you. I haven't been around horses for years. This is wonderful. And all the people here, my help, they love him. He's just a sweetheart of a guy that was having a difficulty in his life. And now he's going to make some money. He's going to be warm and fed and clean and carry on his way. But that's just one little thing. So I say whatever life brings to you in whatever manner, treat each of those circumstances differently, right? And be open to it, because each one of them is a calling and an adventure and a chance to serve not only our fellow people, but God, because every single event in our life is a conversation with God. It's God speaking to God, in whether that God is a horse or a tree or a human. So it's all wonderful. And instead of being afraid of people taking advantage of us, or I think when you really are in tune with that, you get the lemons and you make lemonade, and it's all beautiful.
That's a beautiful closing note. And I was just remembering that, you know, earlier on this call, you said animals in their wisdom take only what they need, and what they take is given freely. And that idea of sharing and gifting, and as a, you know, as kind of what comes naturally when we are that channel, is so much of what you embody in the work that you do, Liz. And it's such a gift what you are making available in your corner of the world, and it's this call has been nourishing to all of us on so many levels, and it's a friendship that's to be continued, I'm sure, in many beautiful ways. We will close out this call the way we began it, with a moment of silence and in gratitude for all that we've received and listened to, and having been able to tune in to the wisdom of the herd through you. And then at the end of that, I will unmute the lines and we will do a collective chaotic thank you to you before we each scatter to the winds. So a moment of silence. Thank you.
Thank you, and have you.
Now on the count of three, we do our thank you. One, two, three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.